There's still time to save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Create stunning patios and strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast with our easy-to-use design and buy program in-store or on Menards.com. Don't miss out. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Coming up on Nothing Major, we are going to go over this week's news with our good friend Blair Henley again. Thank you for joining. And we're also going to go over Shanghai so far. It's mid-tournament there, so let's get the show started. All right, everyone, welcome back to this Monday. John Isner here. The whole gang is here, plus one. Blair Henley is so nice enough again to join us. Sam Querrey, Jack Sock, Stevie Johnson, and as always, the suits, as Sam Querrey put it last week. The suits at SIF Media are with us, so thank you for everyone to joining in again. And Sam, I believe you, before we really get the show started, I believe you have another rant or something.
It's not a rant. Here's what happened. I want you guys to take on this. So the club I play tennis at home, I'm on like the club team, and like there's this big tournament coming up in 3 weeks against like the other like 5 clubs in the area. It's like this massive like 2-day tournament. I'm not sure if it's USTA, like under the USTA umbrella or not. Anyway, I was voted like 3 days ago. I've been booted from the team. They're like, no, we're not going to allow you to play. Mm-hmm. Which I find ridiculous. I've since then now joined the USTA team at the club, by the way. I went on USTA.com and signed up for the men's open team. But my question is, are you upset if you're like on the other team and you come across like me in a club match or John or Stevie or Jack, or are you pumped? Like, I don't know why I got banned. I would think another player would be pumped. Like, when are they going to get a chance to play one of us? But they've come together and banned me from the league.
There's a lot of rules in these leagues.
I think those USTA, they're so competitive, they take them so serious that they would rather not have the opportunity to play against someone like you than to lose one of those matches, because then it ruins their week, probably ruins their month, probably ruins the household. They're probably getting some fights, the whole thing. So I think they take it more serious.
I would think most players would want to go and be like, oh, this is great. I played John and I lost like 1-1, but I got to play Isner in doubles.
You know what? I'm with you, Sam. No offense to the ladies. I think the ladies in USTA tennis are more fierce about it. I think on the men's side, that's just my opinion. I think that would be cool. It'd be an honor to play someone, an almost top tenner, like Sam. 11 in the world, Sam. So, no, I'm with you, Sam. I think that's kind of BS, but I feel like some people probably complained to the higher ups.
They must have, because now I've been banned.
The Conejo Cup deserves more.
Blair, what do you – I feel like Blair took Jack's side.
I grew up in the club world. My dad's a club pro, so I feel like I got to see sort of the mentality from the inside, and absolutely nothing is more important than the record and winning, in my opinion. And I've seen it live. I mean, people will, like, tank matches so they don't get moved up a level so that they don't have more difficult competition. I've seen that happen.
It's like the golf handicap system. When you go play like a member guest, you're going to do whatever to get your strokes down a little bit. I agree with you. I'm not discounting the fact it'd be an honor to play someone like yourself in a league match, Sam, but I do think they care more about the results than that opportunity.
They must, because I've been banned.
Yeah, it would be an honor, but there's also like 0% chance that they can win. So yes, it's cool to play against you, but like they can't even, they're going to barely win games. Like, I know you're playing doubles, and or is it doubles?
It's doubles.
Just double?
Well, it's nothing now.
But still, it's nothing now.
I've rejoined another team, though, like an official, like, USTA. I went on the USTA.com website the other day and became a member and signed up for, like, the open league at my club.
Were you not a, are you like not a member before?
No, I had to call like the 1-800 line at the USTA and like talk to a guy and be like trying to get my USTA number the other day.
This is so Larry David again.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, I don't, Jack, Stevie, John, you guys don't have a USTA number.
The USTA won't give you like a membership?
We did back in the day, but now we don't. I mean,
do you lose it when you retire?
You lose it, and it was like, call the number. And I called, it was like 1-800, it was like a hotline and somewhere. And I was like, hi, I'm trying to get my number. They're like, name? Sam Querrey? It's like, all right.
I don't think I'll ever be signing up for a USTA league to play tennis in. So
anyway, that's all I got. I wanted to get your takes on it. So
I think you should be allowed to play in the Conejo Cup, Samuel.
I agree.
Yeah. I got banned my senior year of high school growing up. I got banned. The county wouldn't allow me to play high school tennis my senior year because I missed too many days of school playing tournaments and whatnot. And so it was that was the issue. So I thought that was crap. I was going for back-to-back state championships in North Carolina. It would have been a big deal.
I had a rival high school take a picture off my Facebook in high school when I was playing Monopoly and posted it on Facebook, and they tried to claim I took prize money at a future to try to get me kicked out of Kansas State high school tennis as well.
That's good. That's good. That's pretty good.
Effort.
Yeah. I respect that.
My orange $500 bill almost got me kicked out. Yeah.
That's good. All right. Well, that's a good rant, Sam. Hilarious that you had to get a USTA number, but if I paid
$42 for to be a member. And then I paid another like $38 to like join the league.
Okay.
Looking for a refund.
Right. Well, Blair, thank you. This is how we typically open shows here. You're just sitting there thinking these guys are weird as crap, but you know us very well, so it's all good. What do you have for us, Blair?
I felt honored to be a part of that, Sam. So thank you. I was in person for a Sam Querrey rant. Okay, it is time for another edition of No Man's Land, a segment name that I thought was so clever and then nobody got it. But regardless, as the only female here on Nothing Major, I have some news topics for you all and you can comment or not. And the first one, I feel like everyone wants to weigh in on this. I'm curious what you guys have to say. Court speed. Everybody's talking about it. Roger and Andy sort of started the conversation at Laver Cup. And then this week, Sasha Zverev doubled down on court. He says he agrees with Roger that tournament directors are slowing down tennis courts to give Carlos and Yannick a better shot at winning just about everything. Yannick was actually asked about this and was, poor guy, total deer in headlights, had no idea that this was being said and didn't know how to react. Curious how you guys react to that concept.
Yeah, the courts are getting slower for sure. I think it's like a weird position to be in if you're like a tournament director. You don't want them to be lightning fast because then you have zero tennis, right? It's just going to be, you know, serve first ball maybe. And then they've slowed it down so much now that the points, it's basically kind of like drop and hit. Like the serves really don't come into play. I mean, guys are still holding at a high percentage, but you know, you don't get the variety of, you know, different styles of tennis. I mean, it seems as if the one style of just kind of baseliner just kind of reigns supreme. And I think it's for the tournaments because they want it to be slower. I mean, you look at Wimbledon back in the day, it was kind of unwatchable to a certain degree. Serve, first ball miss, or serve and volley, whatever. It's now Wimbledon slower compared to what it used to be. And the course is just getting slower because I think that's what people want to watch. They want to watch more tennis, I guess, but it just all seems to be one dimensional now when you're watching this. So I think they're too slow, to be honest. That's not across the board. I mean, we were at Cincinnati this year. The courts were lightning, but I think the vast majority of courts are slow.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to disagree with the claim that like courts are getting slower across the board. It just seems like to me, some get faster and maybe some are slower. Like the term director changes it up. Shanghai clearly is much slower this year. That used to be the fastest Masters 1000 event all year. You know, they would rate the court speeds. But I also, I don't think like there's a bit of a misconception that like slowing down the courts is going to like allow the best players to win. I think like big servers like myself, like really big servers, like prefer slow courts. You look at like Pesci Pericard still alive in Shanghai, just gives us more time to kind of go after shots, and like big servers can hold on any surface. So if the thought is like to get the serve bots out of the field, making the course slow is not what you want to do. You actually want to make it faster. But I don't think this is something that's like uniform across the board. As Stevie mentioned, Cincinnati, very fast. Paris seems to fluctuate a little bit. It used to be super fast, a little bit slower, then it'll go to fast again. Now, I don't know what it's going to be this year. I'm talking about the Paris Indoor Masters 1000. But certainly Shanghai this year, like I was surprised to see how slow it has been, because that tournament used to be super fast, especially that center court and that grandstand court were just icy.
But it also depends on the balls that they choose too, right? Like the balls can
that
get really
is true.
Like if they're slow balls and they get really fluffy and gritty, like they're going to go nowhere. So it just kind of depends on ball as well as court speed. It's a combination of everything. It's not just one simple answer.
Also, Sinner and Alcaraz are winning on any surface.
It doesn't matter.
I know Sinner lost, but it doesn't matter. They're going to dominate on any surface.
Yeah, I actually think Sinner is best on fast courts.
Same.
Like I think just with his counterpunching ability, how he can, I mean, not that he can do everything. He can attack, he can counterpunch, but like because these guys play defense so well, I think the fast court actually helps him a little bit. They're so fast, they can get to absolutely anything. So I don't think tournament directors are sitting around saying, how can we, ensure that we get Alcaraz versus Sinner in the final? I think Stevie brought up a good point. Maybe fans back at home like seeing these brutal rallies on, you know, which slow courts can create, but for Sinner and Alcaraz, it doesn't matter what they're playing on. They're pretty darn good.
All right. And should we have any tennis nerds listening to the pod, courtspeed.com has all of the court speeds.
Oh, you're a huge nerd if you're going to that website.
100%. But there are actual facts. Shouldn't you want to know the facts and not just opine on social media?
Facts are overrated. All right,
That's really good. I didn't know that. Courtspeed.com. Yeah. That's good.
I feel like Stevie probably went there during while he's playing.
I just looked at it. I'm looking at it right now. It's crazy.
Shout out Matt Willis on Twitter.
Do you guys remember that website? Sorry, this is as an aside, SteveGTennis.com.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was legendary. Anyways, go ahead. Everyone went to Steve G.
Okay, moving on to something that I think you guys are going to talk more about, but extreme heat and humidity in Shanghai. And we saw Jannik Sinner have to retire against Talon Griekspoor in the third set. Can you explain to people who might have never experienced severe cramps, A, what it feels like, and B, how it's possible for someone who is a physical machine like Jannik Sinner to suffer from cramps and actually have to retire from a match?
Yeah, I can take this one. As a profuse sweater, which people like to claim was sometimes my conditioning level, which I think was not fair at times, because I do think when I was playing, I was in better shape than people thought, but I think I sweat more than probably anybody on tour at times. And I was losing electrolytes and fluids at a faster rate than anyone, and had to deal with some brutal cramping issues at times. As you guys saw, getting helped off the court at the Open and a couple of different times and other places. It's brutal. I think it's the helpless feeling. I think the problem is you can feel it coming on before it gets to that point as well. And you're out there and sometimes you're playing great and you're winning. There was multiple times I was winning the matches and there wasn't a whole lot I could do. And you can kind of feel it coming on, and then you try to not panic in your head because you know what it can get to, and then you try to fight that panic, which almost makes it worse. And then your body kind of goes into chaos mode. And once you start feeling it lock up, it's kind of a downward spiral. And then it's just a horrible feeling. The pain of your muscles locking up and tightening up, is not fun at all. I think we've all experienced it at one time or another. And, yeah, it's brutal. And everyone's sitting there. You start probably getting booed. The crowd doesn't like it. They paid to be there. You feel helpless and stupid, frankly, when you're out there. And you're just like, and then everybody wants to comment on, well, you got to get in better shape. Well, there's only so much you can do at times. And I was a victim of that more than a few times, unfortunately. But it's not fun at all. Don't wish it. Don't wish it on anyone, especially if you go into full body lockup mode and your fingers are going sideways and your legs are going, and then having people help you off the court, not fun at all. So
I also don't get how does Sinner cramp in Shanghai early in the third? He's like the most fit guy in the world And it's not that hot. I was shocked.
Hold on. First of all, it's crazy hot there right now. It's over 80% humidity. Like, I remember playing a few matches in Shanghai where it was the hottest match I played all year. It was atypical for that event, but I mean, as many times as I played it, but one or two times the sun would peer out of the sky and it would just absolutely cook there. I also think there's another misconception that cramping is a fitness issue. It's not a fitness issue. Obviously, Sinner, in my mind, Sinner is, and he's in tip-top shape. You can't be number one, number two in the world without being, you know, in the best shape of anyone. It's probably his team just didn't quite get enough electrolytes in him the night before and the morning of. They underestimated how hot, underestimated how hot it was going to be on the court when he was going to, you know, play his match against Griekspor. So he just needed to drink a little bit more electrolytes because his body just, as Jack was saying, was losing so much. He couldn't, after a certain point, once you get to that point, you can't recover. So just wasn't quite hydrated enough. So maybe a little mistake on his part or his team's part, but I don't think it's because he's in bad shape, because clearly he's not.
That's why I find it surprising. He's one of the best athletes in the world.
Yes.
And even if he didn't get enough electrolytes in the night before, I'm still surprised he cramped.
If you've been sick or something recently, you get overly dehydrated. If you've lost, I mean, you never know, traveling can dehydrate. You don't know what he was dealing with. Maybe going into it could have gone in at a deficit already. And then
it was hard to watch yesterday.
But you're right. It's not something you've ever seen like an all-time great do, which he's on his way, you know, to being, right?
At 1-2 in the third set.
Yeah, I know. But it's that brutal out there. Conditions right now in Shanghai, like over 80% humidity is rough.
And there are also situations that I've seen where it's more of like a physiological response, where it's not even hot really at all. And it's like a nerve thing.
Yeah. There's no way he was nervous, though, third round.
No, he was not nervous.
Not for Sinner. No. Not for Sinner. But there are other situations.
There is, for sure.
Like Milos Raonic used to say that was a big factor. It wasn't the fitness. It was that it was sort of a physiological thing. But that can be a story for another day. Okay, moving on to Amanda Anisimova winning in Beijing. How many of you guys would trade your backhand for hers?
Oh, just
everyone.
I mean, everyone,
maybe not,
I think.
Sam.
Two hands, maybe.
Was good.
Well, if I say no, then I'm a jerk. So sure, give me. She's an unbelievable backhand.
Everyone. Yeah.
It's a great backhand. No, but she won three sets in the final against Noskova, but beat Coco in the semis 1 and 2, which from all accounts, I wasn't able to watch it, but was sort of a treeing scenario. Can you guys explain what that is and what it feels like to play against someone who is up in the tree?
It's pretty easy to play because you don't have to do anything. They just beat you. It goes pretty quick.
Yeah, just accept it.
But Amanda's been unreal. She's 3 in the race. Like, what a year. Like, everything that she's been through in her life and the last couple of years, you know, taking time away and getting back, and then what happened in the Wimbledon final, like, to see what she's been doing, like, relatively quietly, I feel like, on the WTA side. But it's truly remarkable. And what she did in Beijing was just a feather in the cap on so far a great year.
Sometimes I watch her play and I think she's the best player in the world. I know she's like the third best, but there's a lot of times when I'm watching her in the last few months, I'm like, the eye test tells me like she is number one. Like, she could, there's a good chance she gets there in the next 12 months if she keeps playing how she's playing.
It's possible.
All right. You heard it here.
I think back to the, back to the treeing thing. It's hard for me to like, I would have like being a bot. Like, no matter how good my opponent's playing, I could hold serve. I think for everyone else, maybe not Sam to, not quite as much as Stevie and Jack, but like sometimes Stevie and Jack, because you're not getting like a lot of free points on your serve, you guys could face some people just completely in the zone. And as you said, there's nothing you can do.
What does treeing mean for those who are listening and are like, what are you talking about?
The term treeing, like, too, is like such a stupid word.
I love that term.
Oh, I hate that
I love
word.
It.
Yeah, it's like it's cringy.
Junior tennis
it's
term.
It's so cringy. You're right, Stevie.
It's been around forever.
I know, but it's been cringy since then.
Zoning is better.
No. Treeing is, I love it. It's tennis specific.
Yes, that's what I don't like. It's tennis specific.
Yeah, I'm with Sam on this one.
No one else uses that term.
So if I'm talking to someone that doesn't like tennis, they're like, what are you talking about? Treeing?
You know, yeah, you only use it in tennis, in the tennis world.
Oh, sorry. I have friends outside of tennis.
It's just you get in the zone. You get off to a good start.
You're an NBA Jams and you're on fire right now.
You're up. Yeah, but no, seriously, you get, I think is what it comes from is you get off to a good start because you never can anticipate. You don't walk out on the court and be like, I'm going to tree today. You get off to a good start. You get up 2-0, 3-0, and then like you're just free rolling at that point because you're just absolutely feeling it. And you can see you're not that I've ever treed like this, by the way.
You've been in the
I've
zone.
Just seen
exactly.
I've just seen it happen. And you see your opponent on the other side kind of like get a little frustrated. That, you know, that pumps you up a little bit more and you just get out there and just steamroll your opponent. It happens all the time.
But the origin is like you're up in a tree. Like you're up in a tree and all, you can see everything clearly, right? That's how it was described to me once.
Yeah, I think. It doesn't really make much sense to me, but I still love the term.
It's a cringy junior term. I don't want to use it.
I'm with Stevie.
I love it.
It's usually when I hit one backhand winner, then everyone think of treeing and then just go from there.
Well, Blair, do you like the term?
I like the term just because it's so niche. So yes.
So niche, exactly.
That's why I like it. All right, moving on to Gael Monfils announcing that he is retiring next year at the Paris Masters. We talked about him a little the last time, but just your thoughts on Gael and what he brings to the game and what you're going to miss about him.
What are we going to do if he ends the year like 30 in the world? You think he still retires?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't.
It's kind of like a Danielle Collins situation, potentially.
I'm going to say if he ends the year top 50, he keeps it going for another year. He's a showman. Okay. He'll re-announce the retirement and get another like 18 tournaments of like farewell.
Yeah, so he's retiring 2026 Paris Masters.
He'll be 40, yeah.
13 months from now.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an early announcement in my mind, but that's just, anyways.
Yeah, like, announce it like right before the French Open. Be like, this is my last French and I'm stopping in Paris, you know? And
that's
not
the
Bercy,
perfect
but,
time to do it, Steve.
Right? Like,
but to each their own. But I think, but Gael, I mean, what an entertainer. Like the guy's, he's must watch, you know, TV. He's a, every one of his matches, the seats are typically full. Anytime you would play him, I played him a bunch. I know you guys did as well. Like you knew it was a big occasion. You knew he was going to do something crazy on the court. He's going to hit some ridiculous shot. He's the one of the best athletes this sport has ever seen. I mean, just like his ability to slide around the court and do what he does, and all his highlight reels. I saw something on X earlier in the week. Someone did like a lot of people have done it, like a compilation of his like best shots ever. I mean, they're ridiculous. He has 50 just clear highlight reel shots over the course of his career.
I got a question for John and Blair. Like, you guys are involved in the Dallas tournament. Hypothetically, he plays Dallas next year in February. Are you guys giving him some like send off if he loses second round on Tuesday night?
No.
I don't think so.
Like, what tournaments give? He's unbelievable. Like, but what tournaments give him like a send off?
Montpellier, Mets.
Yeah, all the French ones, right?
Paris.
Or places where he's done well historically.
But you can't get a send-off in every tournament you play next year.
The U.S. Open does it a little too much, right, guys?
Yeah.
You thank you. Like, they're doing send-offs for, like, non-Americans, like, that aren't, like, all-time greats.
We love a retirement at the U.S. Open.
If you're a non-American at the U.S. Open, you would need to be top five at some point, for my opinion, to get, like, a recognition of any kind.
Can you imagine, like Stevie's last Roland Garros? Like, they did it...
Stevie was actually pretty good at Roland Garros.
He was good at Roland Garros.
Thank you, Sam.
He actually was sneaky good there. You're exactly right.
Thank you.
You're right. I should have said Sam's last Roland Garros. You were horrible at that tournament.
It would have been a much better.
Like Sunday night after the first round, Sunday night send off. Sunday at noon, send off before the flight back to LA.
Yeah, but he'll be getting his send off at, like, what's it going to be at Paris this year?
Do you think he's expecting a send-off at most tournaments?
Yeah, good
with
point.
This announcement?
He's like double-dipping in the Paris Masters Series with like a two send-offs.
Yeah. I think we're going off like a little bit of a tangent here, but he's been amazing for the game. His longevity has totally surprised me because 10 years ago, you're seeing him on the court. He had tape all over his body. Looked like he had like a hospital on his knee. His elbows taped up. He has double tape on both of his knees. And he's clearly hampered out there. But like his body started cooperating like later in his career. So he played clearly very well from 35 years old till what he is right now, 39. That's something that I did not expect. So kudos for him for, I guess, figuring out his body because he had a lot of physical issues throughout his career. And it seems like the last 4 years of his career, he's been the most healthy.
Yeah, well said.
Good stuff. Sorry, I'm thinking about like Derek Jeter's last year, where every stop in the baseball season gave him like a special prize, whatever.
Different careers.
But Jeter's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
One of the best shortstops of all time.
Listen, now I want him to come to the Dallas Open so we can give him a gift.
Give him some cowboy boots.
For sure,
booze.
A cowboy hat. For sure.
I want a Stevie J Rome send off.
I'll come back for that. 1 in 8 their lifetime.
Oh man.
Okay. Next topic. I heard you guys are not a fan of the mascot hand holding as you walk out onto the court. Did you see the video of Mannarino with the little girl?
Yes.
Very uncomfortable.
It was a tough watch.
Stranger danger.
Gosh. Usually I thought it would be the other way. Like they tell the little kids to like hold the hands. I feel bad for Mannarino.
Yeah. Like, there's no winning there. There's no winning there.
If the little girl asks to hold his hand and he does it, then he's a huge jerk.
Not a fan of the whole thing. It's like, it's what soccer does. Tennis needs to stop. I think I really disliked it because I was so giant. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it just was, I felt so awkward. It's like super long walk sometimes to get to your benches. Sometimes the kids would take your bag
That was worse.
How naked do you feel when you walk on the court with nothing?
That was Newport. That was the famous Sam Querrey 8-year-old carrying out the racket bag. She was actually like 16 or maybe older than that, but it was fine. Yeah, so no hand holding, but there at least has to be an age limit, I think, because if you have a kid who's like over a certain height or who looks like they're maybe 12, it's like too late.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Agreed. Get rid of it.
Okay, thanks you guys.
Thank you, Blair.
Apparently I jumped off too quickly last time, so Mike, tell me when I can hang up.
It was a bit abrupt. You left, and we were like, is Blair mad at us?
I am really conscious of not overstaying my welcome. No, I'm like, this is not my house. I don't want to be like the guest who's like still hanging around. You're like, get out. Okay. Also, can I just? This is my biggest win of the flu talk, other than like not dying, was getting Nothing Major merch.
Okay, thank you, Blair, for indulging us once again. We appreciate your time so much, and we will see you next week.
Bye, Blair.
Thank you, Blair.
See you, Blair.
Today's episode of Nothing Major is brought to you by our friends at Cornbread Hemp. Have you been looking for natural ways to relieve aches and discomfort? I know I always am. The CBD gummies from our friends at Cornbread Hemp are formulated to work with your body, not against your body. I've already ordered my Blood Orange Bliss to help me sleep. I've got 2 little kids at home. My life's all over the place. So once these arrive, I know it's going to help me get some better sleep. Whether it's sleep or stress, or you just need a moment to unwind, CBD might just be what you need to level up your daily routine. Cornbread Hemp uses the best part of that hemp plant, the flower, for the purest and most potent CBD. No fillers, no junk, just full spectrum goodness. I've already ordered my batch. Remember, I ordered the Blood Orange Bliss. It's going to help me with my sleep. I can't wait for that. And right now, Nothing Major listeners can save 30% off their first order. 30%. That's a massive discount. Just head to cornbreadhemp.com/nothingmajor and use our discount code NOTHINGMAJOR at checkout. That's cornbreadhemp.com/nothingmajor and use the discount code NOTHINGMAJOR for 30% off your first order. Go get it right now.
All right, back to Tokyo and Beijing specifically. Let's start with the men there. Business as usual, guys. We spoke about, you know, Sinner being in Beijing, Alcaraz being in Tokyo. They both took the titles, unsurprisingly. And what do we think about that? And also, Lerner Tien, like it was just like a super. Anytime you do well over in Asia, especially for American tennis fans, it's always maybe going to go a little bit unnoticed. But that's a huge tournament in Beijing, making the finals. Got crushed in the finals, but you know that was awesome for Lerner. But again, Alcaraz and Sinner just way too good and took the titles. What do you think about, I guess, Sinner and Alcaraz's level, as we know, but also Lerner, Sam, about him making the finals there in Beijing?
Yeah, and he beat Medvedev along the way. He's also got 5 top 10.
So he got a couple of retirements in Beijing quarters and semis.
Yeah, a couple of retirements. That helps. He's got 5 top 10 wins. But Lerner's having an unreal year. You know, he's ranked higher than Fonseca right now, Lerner Tien. I mean, they're like, Fonseca's the guy we talk about who's unbelievable. Like, Lerner's ranked higher than him. And currently, Lerner is ranked 36. He's probably going to be seeded at the Australian Open next year. Like, Fonseca's had a great year. Tien has actually had a better year than Fonseca. You can make the argument. I know Fonseca's won a tournament, but great job from Lerner Tien. On the Tokyo front, with Alcaraz winning, not surprising, especially the way he closed it out with all the drop shots. And you can maybe say that, you know, Alcaraz and Sinner, they're both trying to – Alcaraz has a big lead for the number one ranking. So with Alcaraz winning Tokyo, maybe there was a little more pressure on Sinner to win Beijing because he played afterwards. So Sinner saw that Alcaraz won Beijing, and then he stepped up and afterwards won Alcaraz won Tokyo, and then Sinner after that, like the next day, won Beijing to kind of match him. So
do you think he cares about that, though? Do you think Sinner was like, oh, Alcaraz won Tokyo, I have to win Beijing?
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit in there.
I kind of do.
I don't think so. Like, I just think they're like 500s. They're like, at this point for those guys in their career, like, they're going to win, but like, they don't care about 500s.
No, I don't think they care about 500s. I think he cares about the ranking points to try to make it as number one in the world.
But he can't get to number one. I mean, the year's over. Like, he can't get to number one. I don't know. I'm just curious. Like, I don't think that's a driving factor for those guys. I think, like, the only thing that Alcaraz and Sinner are worried about right now is Australian Open.
No, I think number one in the world matters for both of them, too.
It's already wrapped up for the year, though.
Yeah, no, I know. Not technically, but I know.
No, I think technically it's over now.
For the race or the rankings?
After Sinner lost in Shanghai, I think.
We'll double check that. I don't think so.
Get some stats on that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely turning. And I'm back, guys. It's definitely turning in the Aussie Open. For those guys so early in their career still, turn's a huge deal, clearly.
They're both actually getting ready for the Six Kings Slam. That's all that matters. They want that $6 million.
Yeah.
That's what they want, actually. Take that
seven
back.
And a half. Everyone gets 1.5 to play, then a bonus six. Winner gets 7.5.
I feel like they were already
everyone
guaranteed
gets 1.5. I mean, Tsitsipas isn't getting the same as Alcaraz.
That's the rumor.
I know. I saw.
Why is Tsitsipas in that, by the way? It's five kings and Tsitsipas. Like, what is this?
Everyone else pulled out.
Yeah, I know the other guys pulled out, but it's guys ranked like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 30. Did they just skip over the others?
Well, I think you have to like not be playing an event that week. So there's a lot of guys that were probably already signed up for events and. That's my guess, right? The ATP has so many rules where you can't do those exhibitions. And
how bummed are you if you signed up for Stockholm that week and the Saudis come to you like, hey, we got 1.5 million for you. And you're like, well, very bummed. I'm in Stockholm.
Very bummed.
Yep, that's tough. That's tough.
That's really tough.
All right. And then also on the women's side, the Beijing event, that was another one that seemed like it was like 3 weeks long. But we talked about Amanda winning it. She punched her ticket to the WTA finals. So did Madison Keys in Beijing. So obviously winning the Aussie Open was just such a monumental result for her. But again, we spoke about Amanda, how consistent she has been. I mean, she's had just like four massive results this year, like two slam finals, Beijing. I mean, she's just absolutely crushed it, up to three in the world or three in the race. But she's doing incredible. So it's good to see all these American, you know, these two American players kind of get into that field. Hopefully we can add one or two more, which would be,
I think we're going to have Coco Gauff.
Yes.
Amanda Pagula, yes. Keys.
Yep. That's four, but with the potential of getting someone else in there, maybe.
No,
not possible at all.
Emma Navarro would be the next one. And she's, like over 1,000 points back and there's only like one tournament.
So unlikely. Yeah. Yeah, so we get four of the eight over there in Riyadh at the end of the year. It'd be huge.
That's what it's going to be, I think.
Looks like we're going to get two on the men's side, which would be good. It'd be pretty good.
Pretty good.
Moving on, and news that, of course, no one is surprised by, but everyone was looking forward to. Federer has been nominated to the International Tennis Hall of Fame to be inducted next year in Newport, which would be right before the U.S. Open. I mean, do we even need to talk about that, guys?
I think he gets in. I really do.
Yeah, I think he gets in, too.
I think the thing to talk about is, like, let's say Kuznetsova will probably get voted in as well. Do Federer, Serena, Novak, and Rafa deserve their own ceremony?
Yes.
I think so too. I don't think they're going to, because like if you're Kuznetsova, who will probably get in, I think she won two slams. Mm-hmm. Like, she probably gets overshadowed by Rock. She does. Anyone would.
100% will. Well,
obviously. Yeah.
But
you know what? Know. If I'm Kuznetsova, I'm happy being the appetizer there.
True. Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, and right?
I think that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's just like, I'll just try to be a nice first course. You know, set the palate for everyone before Federer gets up there. The real question is, I think we do agree Kuznetsova is going to get in. Does Del Potro, who's also nominated, does he get into the International Tennis Hall of Fame? Stevie, you're shaking your head.
I don't think so. He's got one slam, never was number one in the world. The longevity wasn't there. Look, to be in the Hall of Fame, you better be one of the best in the world of all time. And I just don't think he had long enough success. I'm not taking anything away from his career, but to be in the Hall of Fame, you better be pretty damn good and have a long, successful career. And I just don't think he did it long enough. And only one slam shouldn't get you in, I don't think.
Yep. Yeah.
I agree with you.
Does Fed stay at the Hotel Viking when he's there?
Who do you think?
The Howard Johnson, maybe.
Does Fed reach out to, does Rafa introduce Fed into the Hall of Fame and then vice versa?
I think so.
Yeah.
Fed introduces Rafa, then who introduces Novak?
Ooh.
Maybe
we'll talk about that in like 4 years when Novak goes.
Yeah, exactly. I think back to Del Potro, I think Andy Roddick would even admit this. He kind of, you know, he was won a slam, only won one, super close to winning more. We all know that. Was number one in the world. But in terms of career resumes, Andy, he did get in, but to Stevie's point, like, Del Potro's is not quite as good as Andy. So,
Andy had the longevity, right? He was top 10 for a decade straight.
Yeah,
like
over 30 tournament wins.
But he's also, you look at the people that got in on the singles front, maybe like someone like an Andy or a Michael Stich, who was world number two in one Grand Slam. That's like the lowest common denominator there that Del Potro doesn't quite level up to. So I'm with Stevie. I don't think he gets in.
It also depends, like, the years, you know what I mean? Like, let's say Federer wasn't around this year, and they're like, oh, we need someone to put in. Then you have a better chance of getting in when your resume is not quite as good. And for that, weirdly, shouldn't matter in Hall of Fames, but sometimes the year you're nominated matters. Like, who else is eligible that year to go in?
Look, and I think the men's side is going to be, there's going to be a few guys that get in over the next 15 years, and then there's going to be nobody. We have Murray, Wawrinka, Roger, Rafa, Novak. No one else is getting in until Sinner and Alcaraz.
That's a good point, because no one from the 90s did anything.
I know.
I mean, look, unless Zverev wins like five majors.
No, you're right. It's going to be, are they going to have 10 years with no one going in?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you have like these bare years, then you might let people in, right? But those five guys are in for sure. And then you have Carlos and Yannick.
Then they have to start thinking, like, does Team get in? Does Medvedev get in?
No.
No, I'm with you guys.
Daniil might. He was number one in the world, and he won a slam.
And, of course, he's still playing, too. He could.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Exactly.
He's going to keep accumulating.
Maybe not.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. But everyone's going to be tuned. I've never really, like, tuned in to the Hall of Fame inductions, but I can't wait to see Fed go in. That's going to be so freaking cool.
So we all assume he's getting in?
If you don't vote him in, you should be revoked. You should have your vote.
You should get your voting privileges revoked if you don't vote him in. Correct.
All right. We about ready to wrap this episode up. One quick shout out. Couple of us posted it on our social media. Our Nothing Major show posted it as well. But a listener and friend from the UK, Aaron Kumar, who I have known for a good bit. He's always, not super well on a personal level, but always was supportive of me, would write nice messages or whatever. He reached out to me and said that he was battling blood cancer, and he loves listening to the show with his family and his kid. And it was really, really touching. He says that, like, listening to our show, like, helped him get through some of the tough days. He has now beaten it. We were able to get him some merch, some hats specifically, and he posted a photo and we all reposted it, and he's wearing our lid, which we really, really appreciate. Aaron, you're a total stud. Congratulations. And we hope you obviously, of course, stay in remission forever.
Definitely. Well said.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We know Shanghai is still currently going on. We'll probably give a full recap of that next Monday. But for now, we will see you on Friday. Thanks for listening.